What a great intro this was.
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty.
And it's only appropriate we would play a song like that on a frigid winter day here in St. Louis. Here's the man responsible for that and so many other songs with the Lovin' Spoonful. He's coming to town this Friday night to work at the Sheldon Concert Hall here in St. Louis. Ladies and gentlemen, John Sebastian. Hello, John.
How do you do?
I'm doing just fine. How are you?
Very well.
Here's something I mentioned to the people I was working with earlier today, and I've been waiting 37 years to ask you this question.
Okay.
When I was a kid,
yeah,
probably in like third or fourth grade, we had two instruments we could choose to play as our first instruments in school. One was the recorder, and the other one was the auto harp.
Right.
You push down the A, strum the strings, A chord, C for a C chord, F for an F chord, etc. And my music teacher told me, this is the same instrument that John Sebastian of the Lovin' Spoonful is playing on all those songs you like. Is that true?
Well, it is, yeah. It's on Magic. It's on You Didn't Have to Be So Nice. And there, and as a matter of fact, it is even on the bridge of Summer in the City. It's on the chorus, actually. Whatever you'd call the B section in that song, yeah.
Has anybody else ever made the auto harp popular in rock and roll music?
I believe the Critters, who were playing some of the Spoonful songs, kind of by necessity had to get their auto harp chops up a little bit. Yeah.
Some of the Spoonful tribute bands that came along later on?
I guess. Yeah. Well, all it was that they were in the same publishing and record companies.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Well, it was pretty cool. And to be able to play something that a famous rock musician was playing as my first instrument, even if I could only push the A and play the A, was pretty cool for me in 1966 or whenever that would have been.
Well, you know, my dad was a classical musician. And when I went to a friend's house and found an auto harp, which I could play almost instantly,
mm-hmm,
I said, hey, Dad, you know, why don't you get me one of these? He said, son, I'd never get you one of those. I was astonished because he was always very encouraging in music. He said, that won't teach you anything. You just push down buttons, and the people have already decided what the chords are,
mm-hmm,
and you don't get any variation.
Mm-hmm.
So, 8 years later, when I had the first hit record, he called up to say, okay, this is your father eating crow. I heard that instrument. I know it's on there. Selling, you know, at that time, 700,000 records was an amazing number.
Right.
And he was thrilled.
Dad, forget about, do you believe in magic? Do you believe in the auto harp now?
Yeah, right.
Apparently he did. Now, one of the things I'm also fascinated with is how groups got their names. And before the Lovin' Spoonful, true or false, you were in a group called Pooh and the Heffalumps.
Well, you know, what it is that there is a demo floating around that had that name on it because we needed to come up with a name.
Mm-hmm.
And as an old Winnie the Pooh fan, I just kind of said, well, how about that? And Eric Jacobson, who produced a lot, in fact, most of the good Spoonful records, and he thought, okay, good, that's a good name.
All right, how do you get from there to the Lovin' Spoonful, and what other names were considered along the way? Because I know bands sit down and you have to figure out what you're going to be called. What other names were considered? Do you remember?
Well, we were very lucky in that it really early on, I presented this idea to Fritz Richmond, the jug player from the Queskin Jug Band, who was a good friend of mine, somebody who I had to wait about 30 years and who now plays in my jug band when it's a J band gig.
Mm-hmm.
And Fritz said, well, what's this band sound like that you're trying to name? I said, well, it's kind of like Chuck Berry meets Mississippi John Hurt. He said, why don't you call it the Lovin' Spoonful? Because John Hurt has a tune, I Love My Baby by the Lovin' Spoonful.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the name came from.
And immediately you said, ah, great name, great rock and roll name.
It did have it made people look funny when they said it. They'd say it, and then they'd be kind of embarrassed. We knew we were on to something.
That's how you know, yeah. Now, what happened later on after the band broke up and other guys were out there touring as the Lovin' Spoonful? Did you mind that?
Well, you know, I had kind of relinquished my say in the Spoonful when I left the band. I kind of said, look, you guys, you keep the name. You know, frankly, thinking that, gee, I don't think anybody would try this without, you know, me and Zolly.
Mm-hmm.
But Stephen and Joe, who are original members, got together with Jerry Yester, who did follow Zolly into the band. So there were three members, you know, of not well, you know, two original members and one later member.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nostalgia has a very big pull in this country. It has a lot of financial power, and if you can tour as a band from a period like the 60s, which was affectionately regarded, you're going to find work. So, you know, to me, it's a kind of a... I'm glad to be doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be the Lovin' Spoonful, on the road nowadays, because, you know, the songs I play include a lot of those tunes, but I'm glad that I'm not restricted to just those tunes to
but
play.
But you're not prohibited from playing them because somebody else is out doing them. They were your songs.
In fact, I can play a lot of them that they can't play because I played it originally.
And they don't have an auto harp.
I think they probably, you know, the auto harp isn't too challenging. I bet you somebody's figured out how to include that in the band.
Zolly, that John is referring to, is Zalianowski. I hear through legend through the years that the way you and he met was by going to Cass Elliott's apartment on a rather fateful day in rock and roll history. Is that
it
true?
It was a fateful day in rock and roll history. The Beatles were playing the Ed Sullivan Show,
mm-hmm.
and Cass said, come on over, I've got Ringo going to show up. And I thought, well, how could Ringo show up at some place if he's playing at the Ed Sullivan Show? But I went anyway, and sure enough, she did have a rather taller, more Jewish-looking Ringo guy, and it turned out to be Zolly.
Mm-hmm.
And really, our partnership began that evening. We sat down and played... as the Beatles were finishing up on the Sullivan Show, and it really was, I think, a point where we already knew we were going to do something together, even though at the time, I think that was still before a few kind of transitional bands happened. The Mugwumps.
Did you say the Mugwumps?
Yeah, there was a group that was cast. It was Cass, Denny, Jim Hendrix, not Jimmy, they had a drummer named Art Stokes, and I would come in and play harmonica occasionally. This was mainly situated in Washington, D.C., that band, because they had a manager who ran a club there.
Mm-hmm.
So really, those things were, you know, like 2 weeks I worked with that band, and then that broke up, and shortly thereafter, the Spoonful and the Mamas and Papas both got going.
And why, in those days, were all your songs almost exactly 2 minutes long? I mean, I've been playing them for years, and they're 201, or 1:57, or 2 minutes right on the nose. Why was that?
Well, now, wait a minute. As a DJ, you must have some sense that... this is the magic length for 1965,
mm-hmm.
And 2 minutes is actually shy. It was 2:20 was the ideal, 2:30, right in there, was about the ideal time, both for the medium, the 45 single, which was what people were selling, and really you know, I think started to lose sound quality after you got past about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fact that, you know, you had to wait a few more years before there were tunes like MacArthur Park and things that kind of pushed the radio American Pie, I think of. You know, tunes that actually took 5 or 8 minutes or, mm-hmm. you know, some of those.
Yeah, I think Like a Rolling Stone and Hey Jude were probably among the first that were over the 5 or even 6 minute barrier, which was unheard of when you were writing songs, wasn't
it? Yeah. Yeah, it really was. But, I mean, then on the other hand, I mean, you know, do I have much to say past 3.5 minutes? Maybe not. I'm good in that realm, you know?
Yeah, if you think about it, Hey Jude is about 3.5 minutes of na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
Yeah.
So, do you remember the first time you heard one of your own songs on the radio?
I sure do, yeah. We were we had been in San Francisco playing a topless club as the backup band for the beautiful Topless Maria, and went to Los Angeles because we heard that the song was breaking on the radio. And we got to L.A., we got to rent a car, convertible, started driving into town, and the song came on the radio.
What was the song?
Do You Believe in Magic?
Mm-hmm.
And everybody practically went nuts, and you know we're all like punching each other and smacking each other with hats and things, and you know we're all practically had to pull over.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the. There's a movie called That Thing You Do that Tom Hanks made a few years ago with a band, one hit wonder band, and their song gets on the radio. And the scene in that movie where they get to hear their song on the radio, I think, is evocative of probably everybody's first moment, just like yours was that day.
Yeah. I did actually see a piece of that. That's the whole thing.
Speaking of movies, you and the Spoonful reunited, I think it was in 79 or 80, for Paul Simon's movie One Trick Pony. How did that happen?
Well, Paul called me up and said, look, we need a band that is from that era but still looks good, and you guys are elected. It was that simple. He, I think, was putting together this situation out of which his character in that movie was going to kind of, he was going to break out of this 60s nostalgia boom by presenting some other material or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it, and there were a couple of other bands. I'm reaching for who else.
The only ones I remember were you, Paul Simon, and Tiny Tim.
Yeah, that's right, Tiny Tim. And there was another vocal group as well that did it. And, yeah, but Tiny Tim was pretty vital for the mood,
yeah.
You know, to really get that period nostalgia, not necessarily just because it's great
right.
kind of a thing.
I thought that movie, One Trick Pony, was severely underrated. I've always enjoyed it. When it comes on TV every once in a while, I watch it all the way through.
It's fun to watch.
Yeah,
yeah,
it really is.
And there are movies that are better on TV. I think the What's Up Tiger Lily, I just happened to run into it the other night on television, which the Spoonful did the music for, which was a Woody Allen altered Japanese spy flick where he took this Asian movie and did entirely new soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the Spoonful was part of that soundtrack, and it was... I noticed, gee, it's much better. It's a gag, you know, it's a prolonged gag.
Right.
So somehow it worked better on television.
Speaking of TV, how'd you get the job doing the theme song to Welcome Back, Kotter?
Well, that came about because I was, the most straightforward way. My manager was having lunch with a guy who was a producer and said, look, I need a John Sebastian-type guy to do a song. It's got to be very New York, and I think that this guy knew that I was a New York kid and that this would be the way to go. So I became a kind of one of the auditioners for mm-hmm. this. I believe I later found out, actually, that Dion DiMucci also had a kind of an offer to try to write this song.
But I heard that the show was originally called Cotter and didn't get changed to Welcome Back, Cotter, until you wrote a song called Welcome Back.
Yes, that's true. And it really was just... when you do a project like this, you very often will get a script for the first episode or some kind of a teaser. And to me, what I saw dictated what I was writing.
Mm-hmm.
That this was really about these underachiever guys who I identified heavily with, having been one in school, and that they're, once I realized, you know, they explained the plot. It's a guy who used to be one of these guys, now coming back to the old school, and so that was where Welcome Back seemed to jump right out.
Gotcha. Well, it turned into a hit, as of so many things you've done over the years, and I know you're coming to St. Louis this weekend. I hope you have a great time Friday night. My listeners can go see you. John Sebastian will be at the Sheldon Concert Hall this Friday night. Thank you for your time today, John. I appreciate it.
Listen, I thank you very much for helping invite an audience over there, and look forward to maybe a visit from the unofficial musical mayor there, Johnny Johnson.
Well, maybe Johnny will stop by. That'd be great. Thank you.
I've heard tell.
Thank you so much. John Sebastian here on the Paul Harris Show. This is the Big 550 KTRS.